Hello, this is David Noble in Dalgety Bay. Welcome to Radio Edutalk. I'm delighted to welcome to the show a good friend of Radio Edutalk's, Margaret Orr. Welcome back to the show, Margaret.
Thank you, David. I'm delighted to be back on air.
Okay, now, a wee bit nervous beforehand about how to introduce you, so just if you could just start off by telling you, obviously, a long history. And very notable history in Scottish education, but could you just take listeners through your career in education and then, most importantly, let us know the kind of work that you're involved in just now?
Okay, yeah, we'll do a wee synopsis. Started as an English and history teacher, probably more years ago than I care to admit, and in mainstream secondary, but got involved quite quickly with children with special educational needs, as it was defined in those days, or remedial education, even to take it back a stage further. And from there, developed a real interest in that area and was principal teacher of support for learning and then advisor in special educational needs in Renfrew Division in the Old Strathclyde, and then in Glasgow City, was head of additional support needs for a good many years, over 10 years, I think. And then when there was reorganisation in 2008, I moved on and went to work with the national CPD team. Looking at a national basis around leadership, but increasingly leadership within the management of additional support needs provisions, both within freestanding provision and within local authorities. And then was in Education Scotland for a brief time before moving on to establish my own small consultancy business called MOSL, which stands for Margaret Orr Supporting Educational Leadership, and is also a German wine for those listeners who know these things. And I've established a forum for the heads of education and deputies within the independent special sector, hoping to offer them an equivalent forum to local authority mainstream and special head teachers' opportunities to network. And I'm also currently chair of the National Commissioning Group, which is looking at the implementation of the Doran Review. And so in all these areas, the themes of leadership run through, and that's been a sort of key interest of mine. So probably, in future sessions, that's something I would like to look at in relation to the challenges for leadership when you're trying to address the issues of presumption of mainstreaming, inclusion, and the complementary provisions of independent special schools. So that's really where I'm at the moment.
That's great, and as you say, we'll get into a lot more depth in a kind of forthcoming show. Just for the benefit of listeners, I'm being presumptuous here, but could you maybe, can we assume that many listeners might not understand the field of complex additional support needs? And you mentioned the Doran Review as well. So could you give us just a kind of bit more understanding about both of those matters?
Yep, sure. Well, in the broadest sense, complex additional support needs is a term now used to, I suppose, define the profiles of children and young people who will have a range of what in the past would have been called special educational needs or additional support needs, and who require quite differentiated and often highly resourced responses to meet their needs. Those needs can be met within a local authority provision, but for a small but significant number of children and young people, their needs are better met within an independent special school setting. And within Scotland, there are roughly 32 independent providers, and 7 of those currently attract grant aid from the government. The Doran Review that I referred to was a piece of work undertaken by a previous head of an independent grant-aided school, to look at how we might better address the needs of complex additional support needs across the country. And it came out with a number of recommendations, none of which would surprise most people, about the need to improve assessment, the need to invest in more training, the need to ensure that there was a coordination and a synergy around the provisions made for young people. And in that context, the £11 million, which is currently directed towards the 7 grant-aided schools, that's now being considered as a potential resource to widen training or research opportunities across the country. There was a national consultation which laid out the potential strategy for the next from 2016 to 2026, which is currently the responses to that are currently being collated and finalised for discussion within the National Commissioning Group, which I chair. But the initial indications are that the proposals within the strategy have met with general approval, and we would be looking to invest in action research and training over the next few years. So that's a kind of positive way of looking at the changes that can occur within that particular orbit. But we're also interested in overall how complex additional support needs are met, not only within the independent sector, but across the board. So from that point of view, we have to link into the overall political framework that the government's working within. So it's an interesting piece of work, and it's got the full support of the ASN team at the Scottish Government to progress that. So hopefully in the next few months we'll be in a much more public platform about how these things will be taken forward.
And your work with the National Commissioning Group, Margaret, I would imagine that that's led you into a whole host of networks, and I know through your previous work with the National CPD team about how important that is to you. So what kind of networks out there do leaders and others involved in working with young people with complex additional support needs and other young people, what kind of networks do they need to be aware about that you've come across?
They vary considerably, I think, across the country, David. There's obviously in each local authority, there's the in-house networks, if you like, you know, amongst head teachers, educational psychologists, etc. On a national basis, there's forums for additional support needs officers, for educational psychologists, and in my role as chair of the group during the consultation period, I had some very interesting meetings and discussions with a range of these groups. I think probably there's always a cri de coeur for more networking and more opportunities for people to share. Education Scotland obviously can be a facilitator for that as well. And my sense when I was going around the country in consultation was that there was a lot of genuine interest in the cause, as it were. But people are always a bit reluctant to overcommit because of resource issues, etc. And you'll know yourself from your own sort of reading Times Ed, etc., that there's a lot of angst on the go just now about how you actually implement legislation and policy. But I think that there's potential to capitalise on the interest that people show and the enthusiasm that they have to try and meet the needs. So in terms of a range of networks, I think that they do go from the ones that are constituted formally by local authorities, the ones that the government link into, but I'm sensing there's a lot of spontaneous networking goes on, certainly in terms of the national strategy that we're advocating. We would hope to see that become a more standardised pattern across the country and see a real sense of people understanding what the whole spectrum of provision is and how that can all link up. So I think you can signpost various network groups and various opportunities for people of like minds to get together, but the challenge is always how do you get the people who maybe aren't too familiar with the scenario to get engaged as well. So that I think is, I would love to see networking being wider than simply people with designated responsibilities.
Yeah, and I mean, this all kind of links in then with kind of professional learning in its more kind of broadest sense as well, and mm-hmm. professional updates. So again, kind of just sort of shifting the conversation somewhat, Margaret, you know, the national CPD team was certainly from where I was standing, was highly respected at the time, and I used to love the events and the conversations that went along with that. How has that worked from the previous national CPD team? How has that led into where we're at just now with career long professional learning and professional update, and what kind of legacy has it left?
No, I mean, I think the national CPD team probably unknowingly at the time, because obviously professional update etc. wasn't around when the CPD team was at its height, as it were. But I think the constant message of raising awareness about professional learning and the value of it was a great building block, I think, for what emerged as the professional standards and the whole professional review and development and professional update approach that we now have. I think that one of the key roles of the national CPD team was obviously that very focused advocacy for professional learning. I guess that's been taken over by SCEL now within Education Scotland. So there is a momentum, I think, to take all these principles forward. But my own feeling is that we're still a wee bit away from a real engagement at the level that's anticipated by professional update. But as people become more familiar and more confident around the standards and more aware of what focused professional learning is about, and particularly that opportunity to be a reflective practitioner in real terms about what happens in your day-to-day business, you know, hopefully we will see a real strong momentum building up. In relation to my particular area of expertise, if I can use that word, around the complex additional support needs arena, I think with the expectations around the presumption of mainstreaming and inclusion, then in terms of professional learning, there's probably a bit of a void there that still needs to be addressed, although that is one of the things, obviously, in the programme for government that has been focused on. So I think professional learning in its whole spectrum of that, I would say the CPD team were a great catalyst for the beginnings of what then emerged as professional update. But that momentum has to be kept going. I think you're back to that whole question about leadership, both at national level and at local authority and establishment level. It's a momentum that you can't afford to let drift, because it can easily be sidelined.
Yeah, of course. And with the professional standards that many of us will now be relatively comfortable using, I suppose they were, the new standards came out several years ago now, but my understanding is that there's currently a review taking place. And what's your role within that, Margaret?
I don't have a direct role in that, although I'm sometimes, you know, my views are sometimes sought. The intention, as I understand it, is to refine the number of standards and to make them more manageable and accessible in terms of the applicability of them to the learning situation that people find themselves in. I think one of the strengths of the standards as they currently stand is that they do give people a very broad perspective on what's expected at the various stages of your career and where your learning needs might be. But I do welcome the fact that the volume is going to be narrowed down a bit, because I think it allows people then to be much more analytical and self-reflective and fulfil the kind of expectations of self-evaluation. I would say there's a little bit less will be more. You know, people can actually see the wood for the trees, as it were. And certainly within the independent special sector, the policy that I wrote and was validated by the GTCS on behalf of the independent special schools places a great focus on addressing a fewer number of standards, but in greater depth, and really taking time to consider the impact in terms of pupil gain. I know there are various ways that people approach the standards, but I always remember the GTC saying at the very beginning that they didn't expect people to cover every single standard. That wasn't what it was about. You really had to read them and understand the ones that would be most applicable to you. So I think the fewer that there are to have a self-evaluation exercise against, the better. And it makes it, I think, a more rigorous process at the end of the day in terms of the PRD discussions, that people really are addressing what their professional standards are asking them to achieve. So I think it'll be of interest to see what actually comes out of that exercise, but I'm not sure what the timescale for that is, but it's certainly a work in progress.
In terms of the National Commissioning Group, Margaret, I understand that you kind of alluded to it earlier on, that there's a paper imminent, and we're going to have you back on the show in the next couple of weeks to speak more in more depth about that. So Can you just give us more of a flavour before maybe then going on to tell listeners how they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, the consultation ran last year and had a very positive response, both in terms of numbers and the views of the respondents. So basically, proposals within the original consultation for the strategy were to pick on the Dorn themes around research and training and leadership, and they were all endorsed by the consultation responses. The intention is to take it forward in a kind of pathfinder approach, because monies will be released over time from the money that's currently allocated through the grant. So we want to be sure that any pieces of work that we do and anything that we want to underwrite in the future will have a positive impact. So the pathfinder approach will allow us to explore some key areas in the early stages. And we'd want as many the participants in terms of developing these ideas to be real practitioners, so that whatever we develop, whether it be around training or whatever we want to focus on in terms of research, that the actual practitioners, both from special education settings and from mainstream schools that are, you know, catering for a wide range of need, that they will feel that the focus is appropriate and applicable to their scenarios. So I'm really looking forward to that once we can get that moving, and so we've got the expectation that the consultation responses will be fully written up next week, and I'll get an opportunity to have a look at that, and you'll be able to share some of the headline news when we're next on air.
That's fantastic, Margaret. So, in the meantime, if listeners would like to get in touch with you, what's the best way of doing so?
Probably by email. So, if my email address, not my business address, because I'll give you just my personal one, is Margaret, margretm.or@hotmail.co.uk.